Welcome, 9600 BOD listeners, to episode 160 of the Nerd Extravaganza podcast, where we've always got dial tone and plenty of local numbers. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
I'm Chris.
And tonight, we will be discussing the internet, which we believe is here to stay. But first, we will hop online and go into our cloud storage to retrieve shared files containing our weekly geekly updates. And Chris, why don't you go first, man? What have you been up to?
Well, I've done a little bit here and there. Actually, kind of the highlight of my geeky week was my parents were hanging out with me for a couple of weeks, and then they left. And my mother said, this is a good novel, you should read it. And I really didn't have a chance to look at the paperback novel. And I picked it up today as I was cleaning. And it's a book called A Study in Silk. And it turns out to be a steampunk Victorian novel. So my mom's into steampunk and I didn't even know it.
Oh, cool.
So, I was like, awesome. And she's like, she was going on and on about it. But you know how it is sometimes when you're a son, you kind of half listen to something or something else is going on. So if you're listening, Mom, I'm sorry. I was only half listening. But I am going to read this. It's a whole series.
If you're not listening, I think the irony about her not listening to you talk about not listening is really funny.
Speaking of books, I also finished one of the Nebula nominees for this year. It's called We're All Completely Fine. The premise is that there is this group therapy session going on. And it turns out, as you're reading, all the victims are basically from separate little horror stories. Like, one comes from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, one comes from Cthulhu, one comes from Demonic Possession. And then you get an idea that they've all been assembled for a particular reason. It was a short read. It's, like, under 200 pages. It was a nice, breezy page-turner, and I suggest you check it out. And then on top of that, I also watched an anime movie called Exiled from Paradise. And I liked it. I was entertained by it. It kind of starts off with a theme that's familiar to me. Basically, in the future, there's people on the planet, and then there's people up in space. But the people in space aren't even there anymore. They're all living in a huge virtual reality construct that's a floating satellite. And the culture clashes that come from that.
Sounds like my kind of world.
I think you get a kick out of it.
Yeah.
They even actually poke fun at the girl who's the hero of the flick in her little high heel shoes as she actually has to experience gravity for the first time.
Awesome.
In her existence. So that's it for my Geekly Weekly, guys.
Cool. Brian, what about you?
I had a pretty exciting weekend in Central Florida, for once. I was up there almost the whole time, and Saturday was the opening to Gods and Monsters, the anime comic book nerd superstore. You guys are hopefully familiar with that.
Yes, we've discussed it in the past, yes.
Pretty neat little store. A lot of things different than I thought they were going to do. They are in a mall.
Really? I thought for sure they were going to be like kind of standalone.
I don't know what happened. I'd kind of like to find out. But they are in a mall, and they're pretty much an anchor. The comic book store is about as big as a Target.
Whoa. They are like an anchor of a mall. Like, they occupy that much space.
Yes.
That
wow
is impressive. Okay, I thought you were going to tell me they had like a couple of bays in a mall. That's cool.
It's enormous. Not your super Target, like a regular Target. It's big. They've got, I think they call it the Trans Metropolitan, which is the art gallery side of it. That was a little bit smaller than I was thinking. I thought they were going to do like one third, but some neat things there. Some really cool Star Wars stuff. And of course, I don't know if they planned it or if they had any foresight or what, but just tons of Game of Thrones art up on the walls.
Nice. That's killer. So this place has lived up to kind of the expectations, you think, or?
Ooh, I have a lot of questions about it. I wish them very well. I hate to always be the curmudgeon, but I don't see how they can afford that real estate.
Well, here's hoping they've got some kind of secret sauce we don't know about, because that seems ambitious and awesome.
I talked to a lot of the people in the mall. Something that was really interesting, almost as interesting as a comic book store in a mall, right across from them, there was what I liken to a artist alley.
Oh.
In the mall. Cool. And I checked and I was like, hey, is this just for the weekend? And they're like, no, we have a shop here. So instead of like one huge, you know, Walgreens build out or something like that, they threw up some wire shelves and roped off booths. And local artists go there and they try to, you know, they get a bit of a break on the rent for normal mall. And this mall claims a very neat little local artist area.
That is awesome. And is that just a side effect of this venue, or are they affiliated in any way?
No. The mall, I guess, is one of those malls that's been dead for years.
Okay, so they'll take what they can get. Yeah.
Well, someone new bought it and is just, let's just try something crazy.
That's cool, man. I really like that.
It's very cool, too. I've got a couple of links for some more interesting booths that I saw. Robots Are Awesome, who made little, like, robot art, but she said her strength was cake toppers. So apparently a shitload of nerds are getting married and want robots on their cakes.
Oh, awesome! It finally happened.
And Pure Choice Organics, who, and I just love this, had TARDIS Lego Spider-Man head symbol, you know, his little logo.
Yeah.
And Bat Signal soaps, which, yeah, you guys know how into soap I am. So,
if I recall, you were exclaiming that you are one of the few people in our scene who are actually into soap, right?
Yeah. I'm a proponent of soap.
Yes, okay. Well, I hope they do well selling it. Well, if
at
there's wedding toppers
everywhere.
Look, if there's wedding toppers, that means there's hope for soap.
Yeah. Very cool little mall, though. I kind of like that.
And awesome. When are we opening our arcade?
Yeah. They had an arcade presence, but I don't think there was one in the mall. I think that was just something else.
Okay.
And after that, I drove... most people won't get this, but you guys are probably aware of it. You're aware of the Tampa to Miami trail? Tamiami trail?
Tamiami, yep.
I had no idea there was a Tampa to Orlando trail.
To Orlando?
It's Orlampa.
Wow, okay.
The Orlampa trail. I took the Orlampa trail directly west and went over to Tampa for one of my favorite conventions of the year, MetroCon.
Yes, yes. How's Metro still leading up, or still living up to the sort of anime hype that we built it up to be?
Everything's so negative with me lately. It was a very good con. I really enjoyed it, but I see evidence that those specific enthusiast cons are just getting wiped out. Attendance was good, but good in a huge, thriving, booming market is kind of scary. And of course, everybody was talking about Tampa Bay Comic Con, which is next week. So,
any affiliation with other Comic Cons in the state, or is that like a new thing?
I believe that is like Comic Con, like the brand.
Oh, wow. Then that's huge. Wow.
Well, it's huge, but it sucks for the locals.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've discussed this. These large, I think maybe labeled scattershot cons are really killing the local niche and fan cons.
Yep.
Well, how many Comic Cons are there in Florida alone?
The last time I checked, it wasn't even Comic Cons. It was just conventions. There were 43 conventions in Florida a year.
Wow. Wow.
That's a lot of geeks.
That's a lot of geeks. There's two Wizard Worlds. I believe there's two Comic Cons. There's a pretender to the Comic Con name.
Oh, yes. There is a pretender to the Comic Con name. That's right.
There is a Comic Con in Florida that is not a Comic Con brand. I mean, I don't know if you can really call that a pretender, but I don't know. I guess it's not copyrighted.
I thought it was. I thought Comic-Con was a brand, but hey, we're not like copyright specialists.
But there's pretty much, I mean, at least on average, one con every weekend in Florida.
Go Florida. Cool. So you were in Orlando, Florida, in Central Florida, where all the theme parks are, and the West
and Dinosaur World.
Oh, and Dinosaur World. Was that in Tampa or?
Well, that was West. I didn't realize you were going to go.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was going to say you were also in Tampa, which is in the central west coast of Florida.
All right. So Tampa has Dinosaur World.
Cool. I want to go to Dinosaur World. Did you see Jurassic World while you were there?
Apparently, the Orlampa Trail has a lot of brachiosaurs.
Okay.
Saw
Who
a ton
knew?
Of them.
Great. Great. Anything else?
That's it for my week.
Okay. Mine's pretty simple. Came out here to Seattle and have had a pretty subdued week. Just been kind of busy getting settled in, doing things. Been suffering through the last couple episodes of Game of Thrones. Haven't really been doing a lot of video gaming. But I've recently become obsessed with a new gadget called the Amazon Echo, which is this voice-controlled like household companion that's just like you can ask questions and it answers them by looking at the internet. It's cool. And from what I have been led to understand, it will someday integrate with devices around the house so that you will have a 21st century facsimile of the 23rd century computer from Star Trek, which is pretty awesome. So that is kind of my latest gadget obsession. And apart from that, I think my week has been pretty subdued.
I don't know if you'll be aware of similar gadgets, but is that anything like the Sound Hound people are talking about?
What does the Sound Hound do exactly?
Well, I believe Sound Hound is an app, but it sounds like the same thing. You download it to your phone and you say, excuse me, what's the prime rate or fixed prime rate for real estate in Los Angeles? And it reads it back like, prime rate is blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I think it's a similar concept. This, of course, rather than being software that lives on your phone, which is something I'm going to immediately download, thank you, it's basically a cylinder that you just sit in your house and it accomplishes that task. So maybe I'll have the Sound Hound for when I'm on the go and the Echo for when I'm not.
I'm surprised that Amazon doesn't have an app if that's a portable thing.
You know, I would almost bet they do. I would almost bet that this is going to be part of some, you know, whether you're home or not, ecosystem where you can link your smart device to your home and all that kind of stuff. And I wouldn't be surprised if this thing isn't basically, you know, scheduling doctor's appointments for you and stuff at some point, answering your phone, etc. But it's in its infancy, and between that and all of the VR stuff coming out, I'm pretty much just jazzed about life right now when it comes to gadgets. So that's my update.
Toys.
Exactly. Toys. I don't want to grow up. But let's see. With the updates out of the way, guys, I guess we can now jump into our news extravaganza. Let's keep the same batting order. And Chris, why don't you go first? Any news to report?
Sure. I'm going to digress for a moment. Just back to the Geekly Weekly. Just to let you know, I played a cool board game called Lanterns. And it just got out of Kickstarter. And I think people should take a look at it. It's easy, it's visual, and it's matching cards after you've matched up tiles.
Lanterns is cool, and since we have digressed, I'll say that I have played Takenoko, I think it's pronounced finally, the panda feeding game.
Oh, with the cute panda.
Yeah, that was cool. I played that and a little more of the other one, I think that was called Tokaido.
Both of them, excellent. And both of them, anytime you want, that you're back in town, let my girlfriend and I know, we'll play them with you.
Okay, I enjoyed them both, so... Digression complete. On to news. Chris, hit it.
Okay, so first up, I'd just like to offer a quick moment of silence because we're about, you know, as we do these podcasts, we're not really, you know, breaking news, but, you know, just a moment to honor Christopher Lee, who was always a genre awesome person and evidently was larger than life and probably should have been a fantasy or science fiction hero all on his own. Mm. So, one moment. Okay, we're good.
Moment complete.
That's right.
Cool.
Let's see. I don't have anything really heavy after that. I would like to say that I think Sci-Fi Channel is actually starting the run on its new original programming of scripted science fiction that actually is fiction and science fiction. By the time we spoke, by the time this airs, we should have already seen Dark Matter, which is based off a comic book of basically a crew wake up with amnesia and they have no idea where they are and where they're going. And then also Killjoys, about a trio of bounty hunters who like to kick ass and take names. So at that point, I think we're only left with The Expanse to see how this new slate of programming is going to go for sci-fi. I'm crossing my fingers and toes because, you know, I actually like sci-fi to be sci-fi instead of the wrestling channel. And then on top of that, also, Will Wheaton had decided to do another tabletop-style TV show, but it is for role-playing games. And it's called Titan's Grave, Ashes of Valhalla, or Valhalla, something like that. I watched the first couple episodes, and it's entertaining. I don't know how many new people it's going to get tempted into RPGs, but I think it is a darn good effort. They're getting an A for effort. I think everyone watching it is going to be just a little more of a mixed reaction when it comes to actual, you know, how much they're impressed. Some people may think it's awesome. Some people may think it's kind of mediocre. But I still say that you should check it out. And, you know, you can always tell us in the comments on Facebook or our other little outlets what you thought of it.
Okay. Lots of cool entertainment options. If sci-fi, that doesn't work out for sci-fi, they can always go to reruns of Cops. Plenty of those to be had.
And just as relevant.
Yes, absolutely. Is that pretty much rounded up?
For me, yep.
Okay, Brian, got some news?
Man, I'm going to tie into both of you guys tonight. Speaking of sci-fi, they are, it's not airing yet, but they've agreed to produce one of my favorite science fiction series, Hyperion.
Ah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm kind of looking forward to that. That was quite a read, and to see it on the screen will be very neat.
Doesn't that have a famous actor as kind of its advocate?
I am not sure. It may. It's probably Chris Pratt.
No, Bradley Cooper.
Oh, very cool.
He's on an interview saying that he wants to eventually direct, and he had Hyperion, and he's actually involved with the project. I don't know whether the same goes for Morgan Freeman and Childhood's End, which also is on the slate as well. And actually supposed to come out this year for sci-fi, I think.
Hmm. Interesting. So more entertainment news, Brian. That's cool.
And Tom, I think I can make you happy. Speaking of virtual reality and augmented reality, E3 is happening as we speak. And Microsoft showed off the HoloLens.
Ah.
Have you guys kind of had time to see this yet?
Nope.
I've heard about it. Briefly, but I don't know too much about it.
So they made up a camera with a HoloLens on it so that they could show everything that you would see. And they promised that it wasn't like a pre-recorded video. They had some guy with a huge camera there walking around the stage behind the guy playing the video game and everything. And the gentleman that was playing walked up to a table, an empty table that they had on the stage, and the video game just appeared on top of the table, and his hands, like, he would pick up blocks and move it around, and it was there, and it was solid, and it was real to him wearing the glasses and the audience seeing the tape through the glasses.
Oh, cool.
It is in every way Minority Report.
Badass. That's cool, man.
And it looks so amazing. They were showing a specialized version of Minecraft. So in that, everything's pixelated and you can just imagine how well it lent itself to on a square table in three dimensions. Unreal. It's probably the most excited about a new product I've been in 2 years.
Does this mean that they may have won you over?
Oh, I'll use that technology on my PlayStation 4. I mean,
Yes, yes, yes. So it's not dedicated to a particular platform.
I will throw this in there, since I doubt we'll be spending too much time on E3 this year. Major props to Microsoft. They have announced that they're just going full-bore support with Xbox 360 compatibility on the Xbox One.
Yes, that is exciting, because I'm still playing a lot of legacy stuff. That's awesome.
As long as my Xbox 360 still functions, it won't help me buy a new system or anything, but very, very good for the company in general.
And all your Xbox Live stuff and everything will still work, right?
Yes, I believe so.
That's fantastic. Good on you, Microsoft. You finally, came out from under the PR.
It just took you 2 years.
Yeah. Awesome. Any more news, Brian?
That's it.
All right. In that case, guys, I think it's time for us to get into tonight's topic. What do you say?
It's time to log on.
All right, next stop, guys, is the Information Superhighway. Let's take the on-ramp and get into tonight's topic, which is, of course, the internet. Have you guys heard of it?
Somewhat.
It's that thing with the tubes, right?
Didn't Al Gore invent it?
Al Gore did invent it, and yes, it is sort of tubes for thought. It shares thoughts between people, I think, Chris, is more or less how it works.
Tubes for thought.
And porn.
Yes.
actually, Tubes for Thought would be a good porn name.
Internet's for porn.
Well, there's nothing to say it doesn't share dirty thoughts as well as those that are more PG, but all thoughts shared on the internet, this wonderful information superhighway. Before we jump into it, guys, do you actually remember, I think we're all old enough to remember, like back in like the late 80s to early 90s, they were sort of implying to the general public that this new information superhighway was coming down the pike, and you better get ready. Like they weren't really clear as to what it meant, but here it comes. And like there were these sort of off visions of it as having something to do with CD-ROMs. Like you put your CD-ROM on, and it's a gateway to the information superhighway.
I vaguely remember that, but it was more like, in my mind, it was more like, you know, join this, like get on it, like it was always portrayed as sort of like just still like a nerd culture type thing. Like it was, I remember watching something on TV and it was like, here at the, you know, whatever college, MIT Institute or whatever, and it was just like a bunch of nerdy guys in glasses with like weird like oscilloscopes or, you know, like whatever, you know, like weird like stuff behind them or whatever. And so I think it took like a while for the general public to really like think that it would be legit.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the sort of mistaken identity in the early days was marketers getting out ahead of actual public knowledge. So they knew this thing was coming, but they weren't quite sure what it was. So they did their best.
Yeah, I always thought it was going to be like this huge online encyclopedia that was going to make, you know, doing research and checking shit out awesome.
That is... So once the picture got a little more clear, that's kind of how it was sold to the general public. And I include myself in the general public. I was not an internet. I was not like in a research department as a young child or something so that I would know what it really was. And that seemed pretty cool. Like anything you wanted to look up would be quote unquote at your fingertips. I'll share one story though. Speaking of sort of early thoughts as to what the internet was supposed to be. Going all the way back to when I was in like first grade, which, I'll just go ahead and further get my age away, was back in the very, very, very early 1980s. We had a teacher, I want to say her name was Mrs. Smith, but it could have been Mrs. White or Mrs. Jones, but it was certainly a one syllable last name. And she described to us the internet. It started with a short story she read about a young girl whose mother was taking her shopping, and she was basically like making a diary entry about it. And she was really, really, really excited to be going to a store because people didn't do that. And back when her mother was a kid, you used to go to stores and buy things, but now you just bought everything on your TV. So it was all about how excited she was to go. And then they walked in and the employees couldn't believe that there were actual human beings there. And, that's kind of where the story ended, you know, and that was to motivate discussion. Then she had the AV department wheel a television in. We thought we were going to watch a movie, but all it was she kind of gave us this much more exciting lecture about how, you know, hey, this is your TV, and someday you won't need to leave your home to do your shopping and to do all these different things. Right on your television, you'll be able to look at a store's inventory and just buy whatever you want, and they'll just ship it to your house. And that was, like, mind-blowing. Like, wow, that sounds awesome. And, of course, this is an elementary school teacher in the 80s. I mean, she was way ahead of her time. It didn't really come to be that we're doing it on our television, but that's close enough for government work, in my opinion. So I just wanted to share that as, like, sort of my personal motivation. Like, I was expecting some variation on this for a long, long time.
All I can say is your teacher was vastly underpaid and probably in the wrong profession.
I know. She was really brilliant. I mean, she really was to be that prescient, you know, or at least that in the know that she had at least read something somewhere that this was coming. And personal story number two, this jerk of a boyfriend of my mother, I call him this specifically for this reason, convinced me one time when I was playing Robot Tank on the Atari 2600 that the tanks I was blowing up with my tank, it was kind of a first-person, like, futuristic tank game, were actually other people with Atari 2600s, and we were all connected, and I was actually playing other players to the point where I was getting mad at them. I'm like, I hate that guy. I'm going to get him. Like, I was so primed to believe in a connected world that I would have believed anything back then.
I once upon a time sold some Atari 5200 games through, like, an actual newspaper want ad. I just happened to see it. There was, like, a grandma or something buying, you know, out-of-date games for her kid. She's like, you know, I don't want to, you know, whatever. I think Nintendo was popular. I want to buy old games, and, you know, they're cheap, and he doesn't know. He's five, so he'll love them. So I actually, like, went to her house and, you know, showed her how to hook the system up and everything like that. And she's like, wow, you're really good with this. Can you help me with something else? And I was like, yeah, I guess. What is it? She had, on her computer, launched a air traffic control program. A video game. But she didn't know computers played video games. She's like, I don't know how I got here, and I'm so afraid to do anything. I don't want anybody to crash.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
She thought the 5200 was for video games, and the computer was for directing air traffic.
In her defense, she had probably seen the movie War Games recently, where a teenager, like, almost launched a nuclear war, so.
Well, here's the irony. I mean, nowadays, they have this whole, what do you call it when you do the, I wouldn't call it crowdsourcing, but where your off time on your PC goes to, like, NASA or something for them to
use. Oh, yeah. It's processor sharing or something like that. Basically, yeah. It's just distributed computing, yeah.
But that's too funny.
You get, like, included in the history books if your computer's the one that finds alien intelligence, right?
Yeah, yeah. There were a couple of... Sony did something called Folding at Home, which involved some very complicated biomedical thing called protein folding or something, I guess. And then you could sign up for SETI so that you would analyze these radio signals looking for patterns which would indicate some intelligence at work.
And there was also a couple. There was also a genetic program where you could actually play it like a game as you tried to fold things.
Oh, I didn't know there was, like, a gamified version. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Sadly, I tried to get my ex-girlfriend to do some protein folding, but she wasn't into it.
Protein folding isn't for everyone, Cam.
Is that what these youngins call it these days? Protein folding?
When you meet an enthusiastic protein folder, you've got a keeper.
Oh, that's a keeper, for sure.
Well, anyway, kind of personal stories aside, I guess that brings us to the present day, where prior to the show, we were sort of discussing how integrated the internet has become, meaning how much it touches our lives in how many ways. And I think it's kind of challenging or at least interesting to come up with gaps, aspects of our life that are not touched by the internet, and as well as sort of commenting on just how connected we are these days. I think it would be interesting to discuss where we feel like maybe there are some connections missing. So what do you guys think?
Well, I mean, unless you're like completely off the grid and like on a plot of land out in Montana somewhere, the internet touches your life in a million ways every day, right? I mean, traffic signals, just the cash registers when you go to buy something, you know, even your car sometimes, like it touches every aspect of modern life right now.
Well, even if you live in Montana, that's not necessarily true, because a while back, the national parks had to ban drones because everybody was flying them over the parks to take beautiful pictures to put on the internet.
Oh, wow.
Right. No, that's what I said. Unless you're like just out on your own somewhere off the grid, you know, living off solar power and your own water source or something, like completely like unplugged from everything. I mean, the internet touches your life in some way, no matter what.
Even if you are off the grid, there's probably a picture of you on Google Earth.
That's true. That's true.
So you're a participant as content, maybe, whether you mean to be or not.
Yeah.
There's a picture of you right by your cabin giving the satellite the bird.
Right. And let's be honest, too. Let's say you read the Wall Street Journal in its paper form only. There's no way that at least third hand you're not affected, because if you think for a minute that the research department and the, boy, there is such a thing in a newspaper, and the reporters are not leveraging the internet to bring you up to the minute information, you're out of your mind. You belong in a cabin in Montana.
Well, yeah, I mean, even just the production of the actual paper products, the printing of the actual paper that you're going to get in your hand, the distribution and logistics from getting it from warehouse to home. I mean, it's all internet.
You know, I agree. And Cam, you're kind of bringing into focus something that I think that I don't think about enough, and maybe a lot of people don't. Online connectivity is part and parcel of a lot of sort of mission critical systems these days, meaning, you know, it's not like, hey, we're Amtrak, but and we have a website where you can like learn about our trains. Like, no, I mean, their booking system's online now. It's not crazy to think that some of their signaling systems are connected. I can't confirm that, but I've just pulled Amtrak out of the air as an example. There's an actual like solid infrastructure backbone. I'm trying to come up with
yeah, words. I get what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, it is infrastructure, I think, is the exact right word. I mean, forget about your handheld devices. Forget about, you know, getting on, like, you know, Plenty of Fish or whatever on your computer. Like, it's if the internet were to grind to a halt, or there was some sort of, like, terrorist attack that shut down the internet or whatever, our society would grind to a halt. I mean, there's no way that society functions in its current form without the internet, in terms of every single aspect, traffic, air traffic control, logistics in getting goods and goods from point A to point B. I mean, there's just no way. It's absolutely no way.
Yeah, I agree. And what's remarkable to me is that like 20 years ago, I mean, this wasn't really even a thing. It was in its infancy, and now it has become so integrated that it's like the power grid. Like, you need it. You need it for modern life.
Yep. Which is a scary thought, you know. I mean, because, I mean, that is, you know, cyber terrorism and things like that are very real threats. I mean, it's not like we're just, you know, it's not just one of those like, oh, you know, I'm a quack and I think the aliens are going to come and you know, take over. I mean, cyber terrorism is a very serious threat, and it's, you know, something we should be worried about, I think.
I forget the name of the movie, but it was one with Russell Crowe and DiCaprio, and it starts off like a really great set of lines in that in our involvement in the Middle East, at some point the terrorists realized they were fighting men from the future, and that they had to basically go completely Stone Age in order to get off the grid so that we couldn't find them.
That's a great point. And wasn't that Bin Laden's downfall? Didn't he make the mistake of, like, using a phone that we could triangulate? And this may not be internet related, but it certainly is global network created. And that allowed us to confirm where he was or something like that.
No, I think what happened with him was they got like reports. I mean, I may be wrong, but I believe that they got like reports, and then they sent in this doctor who started doing like giving away free injections and stuff like that to people. And they were able to confirm his DNA somehow. Or the DNA of his, it was something, had something to do with this doctor, and then that doctor ended up getting killed, I believe.
Oh, it was a vaccine. It was a vaccine ploy, and now
It was a vaccine.
Nobody in Pakistan wants to do vaccines because of that.
Yeah,
that's a sad side effect, and doesn't necessarily tie into the internet. But you know what? I want to believe that that doctor uploaded the information from the blood sample in some sort of Phantom Menace-esque.
No, well, I'm sure he was working with the CIA somehow, you know, computer related. You know,
yeah, he uploaded the data. The CIA inspected the blood sample for midichlorians and found out that the Force was not with this one.
Exactly. Or the dark side. No, that's funny.
But interesting either way to contemplate going off the grid as a way of sort of working against a technologically superior enemy. Like, hey, if we're totally offline, they can't track our movements. Of course we can, because we just send, like, you know, remote control planes all over the place looking for you.
Right. Well, I mean, I was sort of thinking about it the other way. One of the Die Hard movies, the one with the kid from the Mac commercials, the one where I guess he's in DC.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's basically the premise of it. It's like the guy like just absolutely shut down the internet, just shut down the global communication grid. And, was trying to steal money or whatever he was trying to do. But, I mean, that is something I think that is, you know, it's plausible. And I hope that our government, you know, has taken steps to avoid that, you know, obviously, but, you know, who really knows what's going on? I mean, look at what happened with Katrina. You know, you'd think that like people could respond and get water to people when there's a hurricane or whatever. But, you know, you got to wonder how far behind the government is in terms of security.
That depends on which department you're talking about, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Do you share the perception that I have that the internet is fragile? I mean, it may very well be very robust, because it was originally intended as a way to maintain communications after a nuclear holocaust. But I just get the feeling like it is one more layer of dependency on top of dependency on the electrical grid, which is in turn on top of dependency on the power generation system, you know, that uses fossil fuels, nuclear, et cetera. And I'm sure it's a whole like loop. I'm sure, you know, those plants are themselves dependent on the internet. And so it goes in this weird little feedback loop of dependency. Does all this complexity kind of make you worried that we're just like a slight perturbance away from everything coming apart?
Well, it didn't.
Yeah, until now. now you got me going to some survival websites. No. No, I mean, I think we've talked about this before. I mean, I think it's prudent, just in general, to have some sort of like off the grid preparedness, you know, in terms of food, water, actual real books that, you know, tell you how to do certain things or whatever. So, you know, in case you don't have your phone to look things up on. But yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that like, I think it's sort of yes, sort of no, in that, yeah, it is fragile. And that if it weren't here, we'd all be kind of fucked for at least a little while to try to sort of catch up, I guess wouldn't be the right term, but like catch back, you know, sort of,
you know,
fall back to like where we were when we weren't dependent on this. But at the same time, you know, it's not just like a plug in the wall that someone can unplug and it's going to stop, you know, like, I know that there are many redundancies and security protocols and measures and stuff like that. So I don't know what it would take for a complete shutdown, and then not only just a complete shutdown, but then a, you know, prolonged shutdown. I mean, I'm assuming people would be working to get it back up and fix it. You know what I mean? So I don't know how realistic the thought is of, okay, yeah, it's gone and it's gone forever. it's more a question of it's gone. How long is it going to be gone? And then how do we sort of just bridge that gap?
Yeah, and I think as you were saying that, Cam, you were getting me to think. And bridge that gap is correct. And I think that we would have certain measures in place to keep us going in the meantime. And I was pondering this as you were talking just then. We kind of have layers. Like, let's assume that the calamitous event that took down the internet didn't involve like making it so electricity doesn't work anymore. Let's just say somehow the internet went down, and it went down for you and me and everyone, and everybody you talked to had no internet in any way, shape, or form. The internet is down. It's not your Wi-Fi. It's not your cell phone. There is no internet. What would be the first thing sitting in your living room you would do to figure out what was going on?
Well, I mean, I guess you'd turn on the TV, right?
Bingo.
Or turn on the radio. Well, you know, what's funny is the converse of that happened to me on 9/11. I was actually in law school in Washington, D.C. on 9/11. And I remember waking up and everything, you know, it had happened and everyone was going crazy. And like, you know, I went to George Washington, which is like, I mean, as the crow flies, maybe a mile or two from the Pentagon where I was living. And it was just absolute nuts. It was just absolutely nuts. And the phones weren't working. So my parents were trying to call me. My friends were, you know, they all knew I was in D.C. Like, you know, people were trying to get a hold of me, but the phones were absolutely jammed. No one could get through. And actually, I think we're in the White House defense perimeter as well. So that there was some sort of jamming going on there. And but I was able to like talk to people through the internet, through like that was back like AOL Instant Messenger, you know. And so like I was able to like talk to my family and my girlfriend at the time and people and let them know like, yeah, I'm fine, it's okay, or whatever. But like, so, but yeah, no, Tom, your point is taken. I mean, the converse is, okay, so the internet's not working. What about radio? What about, you know, TV? What about fax? You know, something
right,
like that.
Right.
Well, for me, just for a second, I'm going to take the completely cynical view about the fragility of the internet and saying that it's as strong as whatever you're trying to sell to me. Someone's going to say it's fragile if they want me paranoid. Someone's going to say it's great if they want me to feel secure. As far as the internet, like, you know, if it goes down, I mean, that's why I keep my books around for. But on the other side, I'd have to talk to my neighbors. I don't have a TV anymore. I really don't have a radio, except in my car. You know, because all my stuff is through the internet. It's just more cost effective for me to use my laptop for everything. I'm just as bad with my phone. It's like, do you have a GPS? That's my phone. Do you have an ebook reader? That's my phone. You know, do you have a text mess? You know, a MP3 player? That's my phone.
I gotta get you a hand crank radio for Christmas.
Yeah, right.
Just in case.
And my 9/11 story is completely different. At that time, 2 weeks prior, I had just been laid off thanks to the internet, you know, implosion. And I was sleeping in, and my brother called me, and he was like, "Oh yeah, the World Tower's collapsed." And I'm like, "What kind of joke are you trying to tell me?" And I want to go back to sleep. Thank you very much. It wasn't until I woke up later and turned on the TV that I was like, "Holy shit."
Yeah, 9/11. I don't have an internet-related 9/11 story except to say that I was also studying at the time, and I was in a class called, what was it? Inventive Problem Solving for Engineers. And it was the whole purpose of the class was to look at things differently and how to approach problems completely differently and, like, you know, just confront it with a problem and you're ignore the first five like typical solutions and just completely approach it differently. And then what a sea change. Suddenly a lot of things changed with that attack.
Absolutely. Thanks, and Obama.
My coffee's cold. Thanks, Obama.
Pretty sure.
Training. Thanks, Obama.
I'm pretty sure Obama and his cadre of nefarious ghouls and ne'er-do-wells were hard at work engineering 9/11, yes.
He was in Kenya at the time where he was born, apparently.
He was in his homeland of Kenya perfecting an America, a Chicago accent so he could get elected.
My flip-flop exploded. Thanks, Obama.
Actually,
do a
whole
podcast of this.
When it comes to flip-flop explosion, there was an idiot. You know, the reason we have to get our shoes inspected is that one. Remember that one goofy looking terrorist who like tried to set his shoe on fire or something?
I think his name was Musawi or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Thank that jackass for the fact that we now have to take our shoes off and we have to smell everybody's feet.
Exactly. No, it's just so funny thinking about the guy. He's like, it's almost like a Roadrunner cartoon. The guy's like lighting an Acme dynamite, like
exactly
fuse on his shoe. And people are tackling him.
He looks like Al Qaeda's stoner. Like, oh god, not this idiot. Like, there's no mission we could send him on. Hey, dummy. Yeah, man, what's up? Okay, we have a mission for you. All you have to do is wear shoes. Can you remember to do that? I guess, man, yeah. And then just light this fuse. It's hanging out of him, okay? Sure. And he couldn't even do that right.
I gave you one job.
You had one job.
Oh, God. Thankfully, he was inept, but no thanks to him. Flying sucks even more.
Yeah.
It's get the points that I like wear no belt, I wear loafers, the whole nine yards, just to get through all of that as fast as I can.
Yeah, yeah, I wear like workout attire, so like, just yeah, I'm an open book.
Well, speaking of sort of bringing it back to topic and tying it in with this, there used to be this thing that was awesome. It was called the Clear Pass. They had it in certain airports, and I was living in Orlando at the time, and Orlando had it, where it was like a biometric scanner. You'd go there and you had to sign up for it. And it was only like $80 or $100, something like that, for the year, but it was totally worth it because you got your own line at security. You'd go there, you'd give them your card, they'd put it in, and then they'd like biometrically scan your eye, which you had already like set up previously, obviously, when you set up your account. And they just basically let you right through. I mean, I still had to go through like a metal detector, but it didn't matter. I didn't have to take my shoes off. I didn't have to take my belt off. I didn't have to do anything like that. And I was already like pre-screened by the TSA. You were sort of like on a confirmed list or whatever. Like, all right, this guy's been pre-screened or whatever. And it sort of it died out. I really wish that they still had that going on.
I think there's a program called TSA Pre, which is akin to that, or maybe an offshoot of that, or something. I think you can still be on like a you're good to go list.
Mm. No, but this was awesome. It was like VIP. Like you just went. It was your own line. You just went there. You put your eye in the scanner. They scanned you. Yeah, confirm. This is Cameron. You walked down a little aisle. It was just you. Everyone else was standing in line waiting, and you just go. And you still had to go through a metal detector, but it was like it was a breeze.
Well, to really further tie that topic in, and I will not say that TSA Pre is nearly that awesome, but they have some sort of program. But I would bet that once that biometric scan takes place, it consults a database, which
of
is
course
stored remotely. So.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, that's what I was trying to tie in. Like, I mean, I'm sure that was internet-based as well, and they had, you know, just an immediate check right there to let, you know, okay, this guy's good, let him through. But I really wish that they had more technology-focused things like that at the airport rather than just some dude feeling me up. Like, you know?
Well, maybe in 20 years now they'll do that again.
Well, I mean, like, I'd love it if they had, like, that Total Recall thing where you sort of, like, walk through and it, like, scanned your whole skeleton. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't even care about that. Like, that's fine. Just don't touch my junk, dude.
I really wish the scanner would just get down to the skeleton, because I don't like the fact that it like outlines every contour and wrinkle in your body.
True.
Most of the contours in my body come in the form of like rippling muscles, but you know, there's
course
a couple of embarrassing. I have a couple of problem spots.
We all have some problem areas. It's all right.
It's your calves, right?
Yeah, they're just doughy, you know? I mean,
cankles.
Yeah, I mean, it's all pecs and washboards and these cankles. It's so embarrassing.
Oh, man. But I'm sure there's a cure for that on the internet, too.
I'm sure there is.
There's a plastic surgeon that does calf implants.
Oh, really?
Yes. I saw that on some TV show like years ago.
So you don't remove the cankle, you just make your calves bigger, and then it just makes the cankle itself look like it, like basically from the implant down.
Looks just dwarfs it.
Yeah, yeah, it looks thin by comparison. I like that.
Oh my god.
Okay, so TSA and airline safety is definitely an area touched by the internet, I think it's fair to say. Where do you guys see things going? And Brian, you've been kind of quiet. Maybe you can lead this next thrust. Where do you think we're going? Like, and I'll ask this question. Do you ever think we'll reach sort of an internet of places to visit as opposed to just sites? Because I feel like that was that to this day is the unfulfilled promise of the internet. This wide open frontier of places I want to visit. Instead, it's just like, I don't know, a bunch of papers I can read. I don't know how else to put it. It's fallen short of what I considered the mark.
I'm actually pretty pessimistic about where the internet's going. I mean, corporations are stunting our speed, stunting our access, stunting what we're allowed to post, everything. I don't know. I think as long as it's profitable, someone will slow it down as much as they can. And not necessarily just the speed, the progress. But as far as maybe having like an actual place to go, I hate to say anything nice about Facebook, but Facebook and the VR technology they're working on looks pretty promising.
So you're not going to visit my wall, you're going to visit my Facebook pad, basically, right?
Yeah, you can do that. And I think, like, the shopping applications will be pretty amazing. Like, I mean, you might actually be able to, like, you know, browse instead of just scrolling through windows or something like that. Like, walk to the toy section, look around.
So virtually browse the mall of your choice?
Yeah, I think we might see that fulfilled. Because that's what it, you know, always was. Once upon a time, your avatar would fly to the mall and pick out things.
You're reminding me a little bit of the movie with, oh, what was it? Michael Douglas and Demi Moore, where she falsely accuses him of sex harassment and...
The Game.
The Game, yes. And this whole thing was a charade and a distraction from the real issue, which is that she and some other executives had contracted with a inferior component manufacturer in Singapore or some such thing. But while he was gathering, he was denied access to certain key files, which would make his case. And so he went in where his company was demoing this VR software, and he put these goggles on. And sort of akin to what you're mentioning, and I don't know if any of you guys remember from the movie, he was perusing this library of secret documents and like physically opening cabinets and so on.
Yeah, one of my favorite movies, and this is going way back to like how computer connectivity, I think this was before the internet had like really even become common parlance, was Weird Science. You guys remember that?
Love that movie, yeah.
Yes.
And they actually, like, dial the computer and have to, like, walk down the halls to the next door. And then they choose the wrong door, and there's the laughing skull. And then they slam the door! And
yes. Yeah, the virtual internet full of... where a 404 error is actually manifests as, like, a flaming skull or something, right?
Well, you know, it's a fair point to bring up, and I'll bring it back to sort of my profession from a legal perspective. You know, I don't want to say it's a valid argument, but it is an argument that especially in the very beginning of the internet was made and made somewhat successfully, at least in terms of mitigating people's sentences and things like that. There is legal precedence for people saying that the virtual world is different than the real world. And, you know, it came up in a lot of, unfortunately, which, you know, I feel like death should have been the penalty, but like it came up in a lot of like child pornography or, you know, predatory, you know, guys on the internet talking to younger people, where they would say, their argument to the judge was, look, judge, like, I was caught up in this internet world. It wasn't really me. I would have never done that in real life. It's just, I was so caught up in this web, you know, this interweb or internet. And it's funny. I mean, you can go back and like read actual court cases where people made that argument, and it sort of mitigated, you know, juries or judges sort of took that into account when they were doing their sentencing and stuff like that. So, I mean, my point bringing that up is, do you think we'll ever get to the point where that line is actually really blurred rather than just some fucking pedophile assholes trying to get a lighter sentence? Or do you think it'll ever actually get to a point where that line is actually blurred, you know, where it's almost... you just sort of like float back and forth between the two without much.
Let me ask for just a smidge of clarification before I give my view, my thoughts on that. The argument these people are making is that the internet has sort of warped my view of reality such that I'm not functioning as a normal person would, basically.
No, I guess maybe that's part of it, but what they were saying is that, like, okay, I'm in my real life, and I get up, and I go to work, and I do this and whatever, but when I was on the internet, it's almost like a variation on, like, an insanity plea, sort of, was what they were saying. It's like, when I was on the internet, I forgot that this was still part of the real world. I thought I was in this virtual world where anything went, and, you know, I did things that I otherwise would have never done in the real world. You know,
it's like a bullshit version of, oh, that's something I would have a weird daydream about, but would never, ever really do.
Right.
Like, if I was a bank teller, I could daydream about a way I could actually pull off a bank robbery, but never do that in real life.
Yeah. I see. So you're sort of asking then, when the internet becomes so much more compelling and so much more immersive and so much more a place, will these arguments be easier to make? Because then maybe even the judges themselves will have been under the hypnotic spell of the internet and will be able to relate or something.
Well, no. I mean, like, look, I think it's total bullshit. I mean, look, you know what you're doing.
it sounds like it.
But I will say there's something to the concept in terms of, I mean, look, we all know about, like, the internet tough guy. You know, you get a guy who's so tough and he'll say anything on the internet, but then, you know, you get him face to face and he's, you know, he's not going to say shit. So, like, the internet is this place where you're sort of anonymous and you can act and do and be certain ways that you would never be in or do in real life. So my question is, do you ever think it'll get to the point where it's so ingrained that it's like, it's almost a seamless transition between real life and the web, like, you know, and you know, you can take it even further. Like, are we going to have implants, like, where it's already just, you know, in our head and like things like that? Like, I'm wondering how far it'll go.
I think that's more an issue of being anonymous than it is being on the internet to some degree.
Yeah, that's true.
If everybody had to sign in with their real name and everybody knew who they were and what they were, kind of, you know, no privacy, no anonymity on the internet, I think people would act like it's more like the real world. My two cents.
I agree. I think anonymity definitely encourages potentially bad behavior. But I think, Cam, you're driving at, are we going to reach a point where it's hard to distinguish the line, right?
Right. Yeah. Will the lines ever get so blurred that, you know, or maybe not even blurred, maybe seamless would be a better word. Like, is it ever going to be like just so seamless that we're like, you're walking down the street and then it's like, oh, click, you're on the internet. And you know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know, like, how integrated is the internet going to be into our life?
That's
in 30 to 50 years, you know, is it going to, you know, what's it going to look like?
If you ask Google, they're trying to tell you there's going to be zero difference. They just bought a company called Magic Leap VR, and they had Weta, however you pronounce that, you know, the Lord of the Rings production company, do this whole, like, here is an augmented reality video game you can play in your office when your boss isn't watching. And, you know, there are things that are on the desk and you can shoot at robots that are peeking up behind from the cubicle, that sort of thing.
That's Cam, that's got me thinking, and you as a legal professional probably have already thought of this. I don't know if I'll be able, if I can answer at what point or at what point we will reach this blurred line scenario, but I could kind of ask you another question without being able to answer yours, which is at what point do we judge any harm done online, anonymous or otherwise, as being as impactful as harm in the real world? In other words, will we know when we've reached that place where the line is hard to perceive when people are held accountable for their internet actions?
Well, I think we're already there in terms of, you know, actions on the internet having, you know, pretty harsh ramifications. And I'll just use as an example, and you're sort of caught me off guard, so I don't have any of the details, but there was a woman and her daughter who were convicted recently of cyberbullying this other young teenage girl, where they bullied her so badly on the internet that the poor girl killed herself. And I'm pretty sure that they were either convicted or charged and, you know, now going through the process of having to, basically answer for, like, you know, I don't know if it was manslaughter or whatever it was. I mean, I'll look it up. But basically, you know, the authorities are taking it very seriously now in terms of, okay, like, what you're doing is just as harmful or just as impactful as if you were to do it in real life. You can't just sit there and bully someone on the internet and think you can get away with it just because it's electronic, as opposed to doing it in a schoolyard.
The U.S. might have, like, cyber bullying laws, but I think either England in general or the EU or France, you know, some or all of them, I mean, people get arrested for what they post on Facebook.
Really?
I mean, like, if you say anything like, well, I'm going to kill this guy, or someone actually, it was in the whole JC Charlie thing recently, like, oh, I don't think the Muslims did anything that bad. They yanked them.
Wow. Mm.
So you can imagine the penalty for such offenses being even greater in this future wherein it's difficult to tell what's online and what's not.
Well, maybe not greater, but at least the same, you know. Mm. I don't think there should be that much of a distinction between, you know, quote unquote real life and, you know, online life, because I mean, the effects are the same, right? I mean, if you tell someone I'm going to kill you in real life, it's just this, it's the same as me saying I'm going to kill you on the internet if I send an email. So why should there be any less, you know, any less ramifications for that?
Well, do you know the person, or is it just some jackass on a thread saying that, you know, in some forum?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess you could make that distinction that it's like, well, you don't really know that guy, you know, but I mean, yeah, I mean, that's the problem with the law, is that there's no bright lines, you know. There's always like a, you know, there's always a distinction. There's always, you know, a way to sort of parse it out. But, you know, the way I look at it is, if it's, whether it's online or whether it's in real life, you need to conduct yourself, you know, in the same manner in terms of responsibility. I think we're all should be personally accountable for what we do. And this whole argument of the internet is anonymous and the internet's a different world just doesn't fly with me.
I've always felt you need to consider the opposite. You may be anonymous, but you know, you're being a dick to a real person.
Well, look, if, you know, being a dick was an arrestable offense, I mean, I'd be on death row. But like, I mean, no, your point is taken, Brian. I mean, I think a lot more attention needs to be paid to what is actually happening on the internet in terms of just. But you know, the problem too is that it's so voluminous. You know, it's like, how do you keep track or you know, monitor that much information being exchanged on a daily basis?
Well, you know, what about the spin side where, you know, it gets to the point where your personal life is judged on your professional life, even though, you know, they have nothing in between. You know, like a teacher, like, posts a picture that he's having a beer at some bar. It's not obviously a party thing, but then suddenly parents are all, oh, hey, we can't have somebody who actually touches alcohol be leading young minds in the world. Or, you know, or the guy writes, you know, zombie stories, and then people are all like, but you're an elementary teacher. What's up with that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's a whole nother topic. I mean, privacy is totally out the window at this point, you know, especially if you're posting all of your data online, you know, you're updating your status every 5 minutes on Facebook. I mean, you can't expect any, you know, have any reasonable expectation of privacy when it comes to that.
Well, for me, I'm thinking that for me, the future, I always see it as being either mundanely bizarre or bizarrely mundane. I think our future is going to offer us a lot more options than we actually will want in our life. Like, I think at this point, a sci-fi cliche is the toilet that tells you when you've stopped taking your meds. Or says, hey, congratulations, you have colon cancer. But is anybody going to really want that in their house? Or, yeah, the fridge can, you know, automatically get your milk. But if you're living on a day, you know, paycheck by paycheck, do you really want your fridge automatically ordering stuff for you?
Well, that's – I'm glad you brought that up, Chris, and especially the example of the fridge and the milk, because going all the way back to when I was an undergrad studying certain subjects in school, various purveyors of languages and standards were saying that their programming language was going to underlie – this entire what is today called Internet of Things. And, you know, this code was going to run embedded on your refrigerator, and it was going to order that milk for you, or at least let you know you needed milk, and so on and so forth. And, you know, I guess, yeah, your toilet would like, hey, your Prozac's not in your shit. What are you doing? You know? So that's something to contemplate. I mean, is an Internet of Things, meaning a lot of devices in your life are connected, desirable? Is it necessarily a bad thing? I could see it being intrusive and annoying, especially in the age of voluntary surrender of our personal information, never mind an age where it's almost impossible not to surrender that information.
I was never a big Apple fan. And something that cracked me up when the iPhone first came out was how many people, like, didn't understand that they were checking in at the Porno Palace and the XXX Theater. But do you guys remember those? Like, it was kind of a big, like, story.
Yeah.
Your phone would tweet, I was just at so-and-so, I'm mayor of Pleasure Emporium on Foursquare.
Well, to put aside some of the more...
Foursquare, where is that now?
I believe that is still in business, Chris.
Wow.
Still a thing.
Still a thing? How is this still a thing?
Some people like to share their location with friends.
Some people really want to be mayor.
Mm-hmm. But to put aside sort of the more annoying possibilities in this internet of devices, and even to put aside our portable computers for a moment, is a medical monitor in your toilet a bad thing? You know, something that, you know, indicates, hey, you know, through some wonder of medical technology, through analyzing your waste, it looks like you might be heading for some kind of a seizure based on this condition we know you have. Better notify your doctor. Hey, that, you know, you're wearing a heart monitor and it's detected irregularities. We're going to email, you know, just maybe seamlessly, maybe you opt in, but we're going to email whatever medical professionals you have a relationship with to let them know so they can kind of call you and say, hey, you might want to come in. I mean,
I think they think that already is a thing.
Right.
Don't quote me.
Okay. Well,
I think the heart monitor, and there's an insulin monitor that does the same thing, or they're close to that now.
Oh, well, excellent. Well, whether they're a reality now or will be in the future or will be common in the future, I mean, there's an upside to internet-enabled devices. I mean, maybe it's hard to find the upside of an internet-enabled toaster, but certainly, as you said, an insulin monitor or, man, you name it. You name any number of things that could be useful or that could be enhanced by connectivity.
I think that all depends on who's going to make the bottom dollar on that. If the insurance companies thinks that's going to make a profit for them, we'll see it. If you think the doctors are going to be worried they're going to lose money because you don't go in for that monthly checkup for you guys over 40, then we won't see it.
A monthly checkup?
I'm sorry. Is it? Oh, it's annual, isn't it?
Whew. Well, you know, what if that could be made seamless through, again, voluntary, I'm always qualifying this with voluntary, use of some sort of monitoring devices in your day-to-day life so that maybe to augment the doctor examinations.
I don't know if that will come down to the bottom dollar ever. I think so much can be said for prevention in medicine. I mean, that would save so much money and so many lives and so much productivity. And I mean, that's just kind of like a good deal. That's kind of the argument people tried to use for Obamacare. Oh, it'll cost so much and save like a jabillion dollars in 5 years. I mean,
Cam, what do you think? Internet enabled devices. Think of any in your life that might be enhanced or made more annoying by connectivity.
I'm a big privacy guy. I mean, I do have Facebook, but I don't, you know, I never have my location on. I never have, you know what I mean? Like I like to sort of keep things as off the grid as is humanly possible in a actual functional society these days. So I don't like the idea of it. But I do feel like we're sort of going in that direction where, you know, I mean, everything is going to be integrated with everything else. And at some point, you know, you just got to sort of throw your hands up and say, well, you know, if I'm going to live in this society, I've got to be comfortable with the idea that where I'm going, what I'm doing, and who I'm doing it with is pretty much going to be public knowledge. And if not public knowledge, at least accessible by some, you know, by someone somewhere, you know, whether it be the government or you know, corporations looking to sell that information to other corporations to make, you know, money and for ads and all that stuff. Because I mean, basically that's what's happening now, right? Everything that you do, every page that you like on Facebook, pretty much every website that you visit, somehow that's being tracked. And then, you know, that's why, you know, when you go on a shoe website, all of a sudden you start getting all these shoe advertisements, you know,
right.
or emails or whatever. I mean, that's already happening on a small scale. I feel like that's only going to get bigger.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And so are you saying that these connected devices are just one more avenue for that, let's just say, sharing of privacy?
Or yeah, I mean, go ahead.
I wanted to restate that. Sharing of personal information?
Yeah, I mean, just to go back to sort of the milk example, you know, so your fridge is going to know exactly what it is you like to eat, the frequency in which you eat it, what you don't like to eat, and that information will get shared when you eat it, you know. And so that information will then get shared with probably several different entities, if not the government as well. And then who knows if at some, you know, if you really want to take it paranoia wise, that could then be shared with your health insurance company, who then could say, well, we know that, you know, you're eating this much salt and this much fat and blah, 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 blah. And so we're going to jack up your insurance premiums because we think you're heading for a heart attack. You know, like, it's just all that information is going to be so readily available to everyone and anyone pretty much. And that's not even like taking into account the idea that, and I think we mentioned this in our episode on, you know, what's going to happen in 2015 and stuff like that. All these devices you know, if they're, you know, we all know that it's not just one company that's going to be making all these devices. It's going to be several different companies. They're going to, you know, have to fight over what type of system is going to be used, et cetera, et cetera. Then the question is going to be, what kind of security is there going to be on these devices? Who's, you know, is someone going to be able to hack into my fridge through the internet? Is someone going to be able to hack into my coffee maker? And, you know, God knows what they'll, you know, what information they'll be able to get. Like just using the fridge example, if someone's able to hack into my fridge, they can get all sorts of information, including probably my credit card or bank account number, because if my fridge is ordering milk for me, I'm assuming there's some sort of transaction and some sort of payment system set up between the store and my fridge. And so they'll be able to get my data and then maybe steal my identity, you know? So I think there's a ton of issues that come up when you talk about integrating, you know, the more integrated and the more connected we get, the more questions are raised as to how we're going to, you know, and more problems can, the more problems that can arise.
Yeah, you bring up kind of an interesting, I don't know, maybe philosophical point there. And I don't know how you can get more connected and at the same time maintain the same level of privacy. You know, you can't be an island and part of a whole necessarily. There's got to be some connection, and that connection, I think, necessitates some sharing of information.
Yeah, and I don't think that it's going to be... I mean, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, you know, there are so many good things that go with the connectivity. But I guess I'm just sort of playing devil's advocate in terms of what could go wrong.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, I guess... On the flip side, though... Isn't a lot of the power in somebody obtaining your private, quote-unquote, private information owing to shame or humiliation that comes from it being revealed? And wouldn't eventualities like medical information maybe being available to certain parties do a lot to take away from stigmas surrounding sickness that probably shouldn't be there? I mean, in other words, can't we maybe have a healthy re-evaluation of what should be kept a secret?
This isn't exactly related to your question, but it's very close. I think the politics of the future are going to be hilarious. You shouldn't vote for him. He's gay. Well, I mean, there's pictures of him. We've all Googled his sex video. Like, that guy's a crossdresser. Yeah, I follow him on Twitter. Like, I know. He cheated his wife. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he posts about it all the time. I mean, he checked in at his girlfriend's house. Like...
I think that's what I'm driving at, Brian. Like, a lot of the hypocrisy that goes on between people when we judge one another might be, like, brought to light as information becomes almost impossible to keep under wraps. You know what I mean? I mean, behind closed doors won't necessarily mean behind closed doors. And I'm not just talking necessarily about sex, but all these sorts of things. Like, you may come to realize that you have a lot more in common with other people than you ever thought.
Can you imagine if Michelle Obama had checked in at a Burger King during the first term?
Right, right, because she was in charge of the healthy eating campaign, yeah, or what have you. Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
We know she was there. Like, I mean, who doesn't eat Burger King once in 4 years?
Right, 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 right. I don't know. I think maybe it would do a lot to strip away this notion of of this mythical paragon of virtue out there. Who we all know we are not, but we know must certainly exist because we're all supposed to emulate that person's behavior.
We know what you ordered off Amazon last week. Don't preach to me.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, I always like to say that the thief likes to laugh at the priest who took a dime out of the plate. That the people we hold to higher standards, if one little slip up and suddenly it's worse than the person who's the sinner all the time.
Well, there you go. And and with everybody's sins kind of laid bare, maybe we can stop focusing on people's sins and start focusing on how they treat one another and how they benefit each other and so on. And, you know, and maybe, you know, if somebody's got hemorrhoids and that becomes public information, should we really ridicule that person for, you know, a health malady? Seriously, don't you get the impression that we're a bunch of like sniggering children sometimes?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing. It's always different when it's you. You know, it's funny when it's someone else. When it's you, it's like, oh, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, Tom, you make a good point in that it would be great that all of those things would sort of come out and maybe make it not so bad. But I guess my point is, maybe some people don't want that information out there. You know what I mean? So, like, what would that even be an option at that point? I mean, if everyone is so connected and so integrated, then what, you know, what will ever be private?
Well, I mean, I guess I'm more driving at what the impulse is for not wanting it out there. I don't know. The medical industry takes privacy very seriously, and I think that's what people want. But maybe, and I'm not saying that the medical industry won't do everything in their power to safeguard patient privacy, but I don't know. Like, again, is health information something, you know, I there are certainly circumstances in which it could be used against you, but certain information shouldn't be stigmatized. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. And there's nothing more freeing for information than the internet. And the tendency for information to be out there in the ether, I think, will only increase as the internet increases in complexity and in terms of its breadth and depth of scope.
Well, it would be nice to just be like walking along and my Google Glass just kick up a little message. Sally has herpes. So I know to stay away from Sally.
Then again, you could have like herp to herp, like where you just meet other people who have herpes. I mean, statistically,
for only $1 a month.
Statistically speaking, your herpes carrier is probably going to be more attractive. I mean, because you've had more sex partners. So
yeah, that's true.
Oh, that was awful. See, and now I just made a judgment. See.
You stigmatize the herpes carriers.
Exactly. I'm well. You know, fuglies aren't getting herpes though. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Can't catch a fish with its mouth closed.
So true.
But I mean, I just came up with a really crazy idea. Maybe at some level, at some point, we'll develop a version of the internet that gives us the illusion of the privacy that we don't have, almost like in real life. Does that make any sense? Am I on a track here?
Well, eventually people will not be interested in it and kind of forget about it. It will just become so commonplace that probably our children won't understand privacy. What do you mean no one could look up your criminal record? What do you mean no one knew you had this disease, that malady?
Right.
And who cares as long as you're a cool guy?
Well, that's what I'm
saying. Is it a dick?
That's exactly what I'm saying. You're judged based on how you treat one another. I mean, let's not forget, it wasn't long ago that if a girl got pregnant and wasn't married or was too young, they sent her off to a leper colony to have a baby out of sight so people wouldn't have to entertain the notion that women get pregnant.
out of wedlock,
right. So I don't know. I think the internet might accelerate a re-examination of what it should be shamed in public and what information needs to be guarded for fear of public shaming. I guess that's what I'm really saying. And I don't think we'll ever reach a point where, you know, you want it publicly known that you murdered somebody and stole their wallet. But then again, that's a bad thing, and we want you publicly shamed. Having a certain medical illness, even having herpes, as shitty as that is, doesn't make you a bad person. It just means you caught a disease. And who knows? Maybe that's the ultimate triumph that's going to come out of the internet, is that we will cease being so judgmental of one another and start to see just how flawed we all are and just how many flaws we all have in common.
That would be one positive result for sure.
Yeah. Now cue the More You Know music and we're done. That got preachy. Anyway, any other thoughts? Any final threads of discussion you guys want to wrap up?
Well, speaking of herpes, how do you think dating and the you know, this you know, ever increasing integration of the internet is going to be affected? Will there be like cyber herpes, or I mean, like,
damn it!
Well, obviously you'll be able to filter out. I mean, if you've got a problem with herpes, you'll be able to filter out herpes carriers, I guess. But are you kind of inquiring as to how this will affect the nature of relationships, or?
Well, and it's sort of going to bring me to my next point, too. I guess let me start with B before A. You guys ever see that movie Surrogates with Bruce Willis?
Loved it.
I don't know why I'm talking about so many Bruce Willis movies tonight. But, yeah, like, what if we got to a point like that where you don't ever really leave your house? You just have this, like, real-life avatar that goes out and does everything for you. That's just an extreme example, but I mean, just to bring it back to the internet discussion, if you're dating, but, and this has been happening, you know, ever since the beginning of the internet. I mean, how are relationships going to be when you really don't ever have to leave your house for anything, or you really don't want to leave your house for anything? Is that going to take the place of like face to face, let's go out and sit down to a candlelight dinner date, or, you know, I'm just curious as to what you guys think the effect is going to have on just interpersonal relationships.
With or without tactile feedback devices, because that's really the key.
That's true. Obviously, I'm sure there will be enterprising people that will come up with ways of translating touch and feel, you know, into the scenario. But I don't know. I just feel like people in general are moving away from like actual interaction, you know, actual face-to-face real life interaction. People prefer to text. People prefer to, you know, chat or email, you know, online rather than go sit in a coffee house and have a drink together. And that's scary to me. I mean, it's really scary. And that's one of the main reasons I love tabletop gaming so much, is that like you're there and you're with actual people and you're sitting and having a good time and talking and bullshitting. I mean, that's 95% of it for me. I mean, I like the games as well, obviously, and the strategy and all that involved. But to me, it's more of the social experience.
Well, you know, that's the way some people are pitching their tabletop articles when they blog them out on the internet, is that the tabletop gaming is a kind of a bouncing back to spending more, you know, flesh time with people, face-to-face time with people. You know, and I think personally we go through cycles of where we want to be on the internet and the new functionalities we get with our toys. And then at some point we just kind of go, enough's enough. This is bullshit. I'm going to turn this off. Or like for me, I have a monolith of a phone, and sometimes I just leave it in the car because I just don't feel like dragging the physical thing with me. It's great. I love it. It's, you know, I have everything at my fingertips, but then sometimes it's just like, meh. And I just leave it in the car because I just don't want to deal with it pestering me every 5 minutes.
Right. But we're older though. I mean, we caught the internet like in the initial stages, I think it was Brian who said earlier, what about the kids that are, you know, young teens or even kids now or being born later, that's all they know? You know, all they know is being connected to this amorphous entity out there that is the internet. I mean, that's almost their world now, you know, as opposed to the real world and playing outside like we did when we were growing up as kids and coming home when the lights got, you know, turned on. To them, it's just being on a handheld device all day, all night.
No, I'm split about that because, I mean, every year I see a blog article about, oh, I spent a year off the internet and you won't be seeing me from here on out because I learned things and I don't want to be on the internet 24/7 anymore. And I think, you know, that generation is going to have that period where they just, you know, that's their, instead of backpacking across Europe, they're just going to go off the grid for some time to figure out how things are when you don't have to stay in touch with everybody. And then there's another part of me that kind of thinks that if you never have to leave your home, that's going to be the end of civilization as we know it. You know, that the cyber terrorists just have to pull the plug on us and then that's it. The feeding tubes are going to stop and an entire generation is going to starve to death in their VR chairs as their robots just kind of, you know, lean to the left in the street.
It's an interesting thought. I mean, on one hand, I can kind of understand the desire to disconnect with flesh communication or interaction, as you mentioned, Chris, because it's exhausting. It can be exhausting. Like, actually sitting in a room conversing with people is exhausting. It's much easier to send a text, like, send, receive, and at my leisure. Tabletop gaming is fun, but man, a day of tabletop gaming, I leave like thinking like satisfied. I mean, I had fun, but like, man, that was a day.
Well, you know, even before the internet got big, I lucked out and I would get like monthly tickets to go to a dinner theater, and I would go there and I was like the youngest guy to show up. And when I would try to like, hey, I got two tickets, let's go, people would be like, well, how does it work? Where you sit down at a table with some other people and you make conversation until the show shows up, and then you eat dinner and then you have dessert and see the other half of the show. And people are like, I got to talk to strangers? You know, the idea of making small conversation and enjoying other people's company and trying to find out what's their interesting story to broaden your own horizons. You know, I want to say it's a lost art, but I think it's been a lost art longer than the internet. I think it's, you know, I think people have been saying something like that since the 50s, I'm sure.
I will say this. One of the biggest drawbacks, not that it's a huge drawback, I still prefer face-to-face for however much longer, but one of the biggest drawbacks about having game nights, tabletop game nights, is I really miss the ignore button.
And we all know what you mean by that, good sir.
And I think that's what I meant by exhausting. Like, God, there's sometimes, yeah, I just want to mute somebody. You lose the godlike power to decline to interact with somebody when you're in the same room with them. So it can be quite exhausting. And Cam, you find it disturbing that people are opting to wield that power as opposed to interact?
Yeah, see, I don't mind that. Like, even, you know, I mean, you guys know more than full well that you know, I've had my issues too at the gaming table. But I just find it disturbing that the more connected we are, the farther apart we are, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? The more connected we are in terms of technology, the further apart socially as a society we are. And I think that does not bode well for a lot of the younger generation in terms of their interactions with other people. I mean, I've met teens and young adults who, I mean, they can't hold a simple conversation because they're not used to speaking to people. I mean, they're used to just being, you know, playing Halo and you know, teabagging people, but but you know, they're not used to holding a conversation about life or about anything. And you know, like they've never gone on a date. They've never sat down and had a conversation with someone about, you know, just about the weather or whatever, you know? And I think that is a definite deterioration of society.
So are you talking about a full-blown conversation or the art of small talk or both?
I mean, both. Like, you know, you can't – these days it's like – unless you're texting someone, you're not really talking to them. I mean, you know, how many times, I mean, aside from us getting together, you know, every week and talking shit like we do on the show, I mean, when's the last time you actually sat down with someone and had a conversation about life or about philosophy or about art or about books or about anything?
Good point. I mean, outside of my circle of friends or just,
I mean, anyone, anyone. I mean, even with your friends.
Yeah, my friends and I don't get together nearly as much. I will say that. Like, even to get together and play games, only tabletop does that. And I suspect that's only because you can't do that on the internet.
Well, you know, to bring it up as a side point, you know, we actually have two types of conventions for fandom. One is the for-profit convention, which is like Dragon Con and, you know, San Diego Comic-Con and things like that. But there's also the volunteer conventions where fans just get together and put on a little convention of their own. And that kind of has died off, mostly because people feel like, oh, I don't have to have this local convention I can go to and just hang out, because one, I've got the for-profit convention, and two, I've got the internet. I don't need to have a little small get-together and hang out with my buddies and talk about stuff.
I've got a Facebook group. I don't need like an in-person group.
Exactly. Or a sci-fi club. Or just a club of guys to hang out and chat with.
Yeah, I guess my personal view is that's a negative, but maybe it's not. I mean, I'm willing to concede the point that maybe it's not a negative. Maybe it's just an evolutionary step in society. But to me, you know, that social interaction, that just that closeness of humanity is a loss. You know, I think it's a big loss.
I don't know how you can maintain empathy not knowing anyone.
Right.
Mm. I like to think that's somewhat hardwired, but that,
no.
That's a fair question.
I know of at least one guy who's a speaker to, you know, inner city youth. He used to be a gangbanger, and he said the wake-up call for him was getting shot because he didn't realize how painful it was. And once he was actually shot and was like, holy shit, this is bad, you know, then it occurred to him after that. He was like, oh shit, no, don't join gangs. This is stupid. The point of that was he didn't really realize how painful a gunshot wound was until he got shot. And he had zero empathy with the idea that the bullets he was putting out were going to hurt people and how much it was going to hurt.
Right.
I see. So experiencing is believing, so to speak. As you're saying, that
maybe if he had more empathy with people, the idea of getting shot would be a bad idea, with beyond just knowing that it hurt like hell.
Okay, I gotcha. So the world is better experienced in person, at least some of the time. It's kind of your point.
Yeah. I mean, we've gone back and forth with this a little bit in literature. You know, there's times when writers just write from their little desks, and then there's times they go out into the real world and write back. I mean, the Red Badge of Courage was written from a desk, and people thought it was the most realistic accounting of war at the time. And then, you know, there's Jack London and Mark Twain, who all wrote from experience firsthand about their cultures and the places they went to.
Now you're making the counter argument. So maybe life lived online isn't so bad. I don't know if we're going to get to any kind of a consensus here. I think maybe a takeaway is that we should guard against a mass disconnection in society brought about by too much connection.
I'll play devil's advocate and I'll quote Star Wars like we always have. Does anybody remember when Deanna Troi was trying to become a lieutenant commander?
Yeah, and she was like having the problem with all the tests or whatever.
Yeah. And by sending Geordi to his death, she passed the test. It is distasteful to me, but it is possible that our evolutionary tract is moving us towards more analytical, less empathic.
Well, we talked about that sort of in the AI episode way back, right, when we were saying like if there was an AI that could accumulate all of the knowledge of the world into, you know, one sort of 50,000 foot view of society and its trajectory and how it should go, that we might not be happy with the choices that it made, because it wouldn't be empathetic. It would be cold and calculating in terms of, you know, all right, who's got to die? Who's not going to get resources? Who's going to, you know, who's going to live, et cetera.
It may be that that's the path to sustainability.
Yeah.
I mean, we do complain about our limited resources and our need to expand. Well, maybe we should just say, like, sorry, there's too fucking many of you guys.
Yeah. Soylent Green is people.
No, really.
I mean, no, but you know, I think like everything else, it'll probably be, you know, a mix. You know, it's never one extreme to the other. But you know, I, for one, just as a takeaway, think that, at least in my little corner, you know, I love the internet. I love being connected. I love what it does for society. But at the same time, I want to keep some part of life for myself, you know, some part of my own privacy, some part of my own, I guess, just place in society without the internet. You know, I want to be able to sit down with friends and have coffee and talk. But that's me, you know. Other people might not care about that, might not want that. So I guess it's really comes down to the individual and society as a whole as it moves forward.
Yeah, I think at least until they figure out a way to integrate our brains, you still have the freedom to be alone with your thoughts while you're taking a walk. People can't read your mind just yet, so at least there's that refuge for you.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see. Google Glass might, you know.
They can probably predict exactly where you're going to go on that walk and how long you'll be gone.
Exactly. But... and what stores you're going to visit.
Yeah, but they have no idea what I'm thinking.
It's
usually... Skull, my sanctuary.
It's usually protein folding.
That should be the episode title. Anyway, guys, I think we have folded this topic over and over and tempered it such that it is an unbreakably solid foundation for this episode.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with that being the case, what do you say we wrap it up?
I think we can fold it up and pack it away.
And ship it, no less.
Okay, on that note, we invite our listeners to utilize the internet to its fullest by checking us out on iTunes, subscribing to us, giving us maximum stars, writing us a favorable review, or if iTunes isn't their thing, checking us out through whatever other pod-catching software they happen to use. And as well, check us out on internet streaming through a service known as Stitcher.
Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, add us to your Google Plus circle, and don't forget to join the Nerdstravaganza HQ group on Facebook for all your social needs.
Check out our website, nerdstravaganza.com, for this and all of our back episodes. Check out YouTube for all of our premium content videos, movie reviews, board game reviews, and all that other good stuff. And forget everything I said about in-person social interaction and shoot us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
And that leaves us with only one last thing to say, dear listeners.
Mr. Flush says, you need Metamucil and air freshener and you have cancer.
Mr. Flush. That's pretty
good. Oh, Flushy the Bowl.
Yeah, I was thinking about that halfway through the episode, and I said, you know what? I need to save that for the goodbye.
That's hilarious.
That's good.
Mr. Flush says, you need Metamucil. Holy shit.
Do I need another voice, or was that good enough?
No, that was good.